More job cuts.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. We got word this morning that private American employers cut 473,000 jobs in June. That's according to ADP Employer Services. Doug Foreman is Director of Equities at Highmark Capital. He joins us live from San Francisco this morning. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Steve.
So these ADP numbers, more than expected, but not as many jobs lost as in May. So which one's more important?
Well, I think, you know, we're getting a little bit better on unemployment, but not as fast as people had forecasted. So, you know, it's a little bit disappointing on the margin. But, you know, the pace of layoffs, is, I would point out, is definitely slowing. And ADP, by the way, which usually is a pretty good reliable indicator of unemployment, at least last month, was off by a substantial amount, about 140,000 jobs. So we'll see what happens this month because nobody's quite sure why they were off so much last month.
On the other hand, Doug, Europe saw some better manufacturing numbers on this first day of the third quarter. Any comfort for us in that regard?
Definitely, Steve. I mean, if you go back to last fall, this has really been a global meltdown. It's just not U.S. or overseas. It's had weakness. It's all the above. So investors are looking for, you know, any signs of recovery, not just here, but also abroad.
We have these pending home sales and automobile sales coming out later today, Doug. If those are better, I mean, what will that do for the mood today, do you think?
Well, it definitely will help the mood. I think home sales in particular, you know, they got us, they sort of got us into this mess, so people are clearly looking for signs of stability there. And I think the last couple months, although the data's been a little bit mixed, there are some positive signs starting to emerge that maybe housing's actually hit a bottom here, which would be very important for us going forward.
And we saw today that mortgage applications dropped, 30% from the Mortgage Bankers Association, right?
Exactly. You know, rates have backed up, obviously, as the economy's gotten a little bit better, and that has slowed down a lot of the refinance activity that we've seen recently.
All right. Doug Foreman, Director of Equities at Highmark Capital, joining us live from San Francisco. Doug, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
We do appreciate it. All right. Where's Wall Street? Right now, Wall Street is up. The S&P 500 up about a full percent, 8 points. The NASDAQ up again about a percent, and the Dow as well, 97 points for the Dow, and it's at 85.34. The Asian markets ended today mostly lower. The Hang Seng closed for holiday. European shares are higher right now. For decades, U.S. cities have lost residents to the outlying suburbs, but according to census data out today, the trend is reversing, and the economy may have something to do with it. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Sam Eaton.
The numbers speak for themselves. Last year, Los Angeles posted its largest increase in residents since 2002. New York, the second biggest this decade. Chicago grew by nearly a percent after 5 years of declines. Some say it's a reflection of how deeply the economy has limited people's ability to move. But Carol Coletta with the Urban Leader Network CEOs for Cities says the shift is more profound. She says cities have become more family-friendly in recent years. And in a down economy, Coletta says urban living can have economic benefits as well.
No one's quite certain they're going to have a job next week. And being in a city generally delivers more access to more opportunity.
Smaller cities like Minneapolis and Columbus, Ohio, also posted population gains. On the flip side, cities like Las Vegas, that depended on housing construction for their growth, saw steep declines. And suburbs near major cities posted their lowest growth in the past decade. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Listening to the Morning Report for Wednesday, July 1st, 2009 at marketplace.org. In 46 states, July 1st, today, means ringing in the new fiscal year. Not a happy new year, though. Nearly all the states have cut programs to deal with huge budget shortfalls. Some, including California and Pennsylvania and Indiana, now face partial government shutdowns because legislators couldn't craft a new budget by today. As Mitchell Hartman reports, with all the budget cutting that's already come, the pain isn't nearly over. The recession has punched a $166 billion hole in state budgets nationwide. The feds have made up nearly half of that with stimulus money. States have cut services and laid off employees. They've dipped into reserves. And 25 have raised taxes. Brian Sigritz is with the National Association of State Budget Officers.
States that were very hesitant to even look at tax increases now are being forced to at least consider it.
He says legislatures are worried about a voter backlash, so they're treading carefully.
They're hesitant to do the broad-based tax increases, increasing sales tax, personal income tax, so instead they might be willing to increase things like cigarette taxes and increase fees.
But Sigritz says whatever states have already done, it's probably not enough because their revenue just keeps falling.
A lot of states throughout fiscal 2010 are going to have to come back and look at cutting the budget again.
At least until the economy turns around and tax collections revive. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Sweden claims it's produced a climate change miracle and it wants the U.S. and China to follow suit. The country is calling for deep cuts in greenhouse gas emissions as it takes over the rotating EU presidency today. From the European desk in London, Stephen Beard reports.
As the six-month-long presidency gets underway, the Swedes are already focusing on a major event in December, the Copenhagen Summit on Climate Change. They want to persuade the key greenhouse gas polluters, the US and China, to sign up to a new climate deal. That need not damage their economies, says Stefan Tillander, Sweden's climate change ambassador.
In Sweden, we have been able to show that it's possible to reduce emissions of greenhouse gases while maintaining high economic growth rates.
Since 1990, the Swedish economy has grown by 50%, while the country cut carbon emissions by one-tenth. But the Swedish model won't be an easy sell. It's weaned the economy away from fossil fuels with a very hefty carbon tax, the equivalent of $1.25 on every gallon of gas. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The financial crisis has spawned a number of outlandish programs to try and stimulate recovery, but the PPIP has to be the most exotic. That's the public-private partnership, where the government encourages private investors to buy troubled assets. Now, the program was announced with much fanfare in March, and there's talk the Treasury could finally roll the PPIP out today, but as Ashley Milne-Tite reports, it's already looking a lot less ambitious than it was when it was originally launched.
The original plan was aimed at buying everything from loans to bonds to mortgages that had been sliced and diced and sold as asset-backed securities. Now it's those securities that will be the focus of the plan. David Byme is a finance professor at Columbia Business School. He says the Treasury seems ready to try the PPIP on a small scale to see if anything works.
The real question is, can you find trades that sellers will be willing to sell at and buyers will be willing to buy at? And maybe the answer is no.
Right now, the market's locked. The banks holding the securities won't drop their prices, and buyers think assets are too risky to warrant more than a fraction of their original value. Byme says the government has pumped billions of dollars into banks in recent months. With their cash cushions comfortably plumped, the banks don't need to sell those securities as badly as they did before. He says that's got plenty of people wondering if there's any need for the PPIP at all. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
This week, the Supreme Court issued formal opinions for all but one of the cases that it heard this term. As Corb O'Connor reports from Washington, the remaining case could dramatically change how election campaigns are financed.
Just weeks before the 2008 presidential primaries, a conservative group called Citizens United wanted to release a film funded in part by corporations. It was called Hillary, the movie.
Steeped in controversy, steeped in sleaze.
She's no Richard Nixon, she's worse.
The creators say it's a documentary. The Federal Election Commission sided with critics who call it a 90-minute attack ad. Under the McCain-Feingold finance law, corporately funded ads can't air within 30 days of a primary election. So the group appealed the FEC's decision to the Supreme Court. Matt McGill is a partner in the firm that represented Citizens United.
One of the things that separates our democracy from regimes like that of Iran is that we allow our citizenry to criticize our leader.
And that First Amendment right is what the justices are now focused on. Trevor Potter is a former chairman of the Federal Election Commission. He's concerned because depending on how the court ultimately rules, large chunks of McCain-Feingold could be eliminated.
We needed it because corporations had found a way around the 100-year-old ban on spending money in elections. What the court is now facing is the deeper question of, is that ban in fact permissible?
Potter and others say the implications of relaxed spending laws could mean banks, automakers, and other corporations will produce ads showing support or opposition to candidates who did their legislative bidding. Lawyers will re-argue the case before the High Court on September 9th. In Washington, I'm Corb O'Connor for Marketplace.
Back when the economy was booming, card companies were pushing a lot of credit. Today, not so much. A lot of declines, interest rate hikes, and credit line reductions. So why, and most importantly, how, do they do it? It seems the card companies are doing a lot of data profiling these days. Where we live, where we shop, what we buy. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
When Kevin Johnson got back from his honeymoon in Jamaica last October, he had a letter from American Express. It seems that honeymoon was over, too. Amex was slashing Johnson's credit limit by 60%. Not because he'd missed a payment or had bad credit. The letter said,
other customers who have used their card at establishments where you recently shopped have a poor repayment history with American Express.
Amex didn't like where Johnson was shopping.
When I reached out to American Express, I couldn't get a clear answer. That's how the journey began.
Johnson started a website called newcreditrules.com. Consumers compare notes online to figure out why their credit got cut. Johnson thinks he got nailed for shopping at Walmart. Amex denies that, but says it does track how customers use their cards. All of the card companies do it. It's called data mining. Robert Grossman is the director of the National Center for Data Mining.
Data mining uses data to make predictions, oftentimes about what people will do, what will happen, etc.
Grossman says the companies use intricate behavior models.
If you have traditionally shopped at a particular type of store for the last 20 years, and you're suddenly there's a huge change in your behavior, there's probably a reason.
Other behaviors card companies may see as warning signs: using your card at a bar, to get your tires retreaded, getting a cash advance. Card companies also buy information on other parts of your financial life. One of the biggest data sellers is Equifax. Tom Madison manages mortgage services for the company.
Lately, the demand for that data has grown considerably. It's now becoming an extremely hot commodity.
Madison says banks want more information and fresher information than ever. Business is up 50% over last year. Meanwhile, visitors to Kevin Johnson's site claim they've gotten their credit cut for using their cards at places like Quiznos, Exxon, and McDonald's. His advice?
Watch where you shop and what you purchase. And if you're in doubt, use cash.
I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And you can read the letter that Kevin Johnson received at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Wednesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.